Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Hey, it's Peter, and you are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and sideshow.com. This episode is just a little bit different because, how do I say it? I'm in the north of France, number one, as I speak to you now. And number two, whilst I'm not great at speaking about myself on the Sideshow, something I keep very different and separate, entirely separate, in fact, from what I do for a living, which is really the design and build of gardens. This September the 18th, it's the 18th and the 19th, but on the 18th, the Tuesday, I'll be speaking at the Landscape Show in Battersea Park, London, alongside none other than former guest of the show, director of London College of Garden Design, well-known to you and to me, the Andrew Fisher Tomlin. Why is, well, let me play you this wee little clip from France Trois. That's French Tree, or France Tree, my apologies. Probably the equivalent of BBC Two, I'm told. It's about 45 seconds. It's in French. You don't need to speak French. It'll only last a little bit. And I might just put in context how what I and Andrew are part of is seen over there. Take a listen.
Peter Donegan est l'un des deux paysagistes irlandais dont le projet a été choisi pour réaliser l'un des 15 jardins de la paix qui commence à être aménagé dans les Hauts-de-France. Celui-ci est en train de voir le jour au pied de l'Historial de Péronne, situé près des Douves. Ce jardin de la paix irlandais se veut être un espace partagé ouvert au public, près d'un musée dédié à la mémoire de la Grande Guerre.
You need a place to sit in the shade.
Ce sera un endroit où on pourra s'asseoir à l'ombre. Et ce sera insolite aussi. Le son des rires et des conversations va rebondir sur la pierre et monter jusqu'à la rue. Mais d'en haut, vous ne saurez pas d'où ça vient. Il faudra descendre les escaliers pour découvrir ce qui se passe.
Et voilà ce à quoi ressemblera ce jardin à l'irlandaise. À travers l'art paysager, ces jardins deviendront de nouveaux espaces de recueillement, des lieux de promenade paisibles, tout proches des lieux d'histoire relatant les conflits passés.
So Andrew's garden is based at Thiepval Memorial. It commemorates the missing, those who died who don't have a proper grave or burial. On one hand, it's a magnificent place to visit and to go to, and I've been there two or three times at this stage of the game. But how do you get somebody to agree to let you build a garden, on one hand, in the moat of a castle 30 foot below street level, that has seen a Franco-Prussian War, 1871, a World War One? These garden series will commemorate the end of that, and then shortly after World War Two. And it's really important in my, maybe, quite childlike at times head, that we take a bit of a step back, that smile comes to the forefront, that you push a little bit the things that are not always right in the world to one side. And maybe there's an element of all of those cliches of Peter Donegan and Falling in Love and Teenage Kicks and Romeo and Juliet by Dire Straits and Seeing Puddles and Dancing in Them and other people laughing maybe at what you're doing, be that making an idiot of yourself or just having a good time. So I'm going to play you an interview that I did with a good friend of mine, Ken Maguire, on KCLR, based in Kilkenny. And it's going to flow straight into another interview that I did with Jerry Kelly on LMFM. Take a listen and enjoy.
Ken Maguire on KCLR.
Now, we've spoken about the Somme before with Des from Manning Travel. Northern France, absolutely steeped with history. Great connection to World War One. Kilkenny's just had the new city, Great War Memorial, unveiled in the past week. But 100 years on from the Great War and the end of conflict, landscapers from countries who fought in Northern France are creating peace gardens at a number of sites in the region. One of those is Peter Donegan. He also happens to be presenter and producer of the award-winning gardening podcast, The Sod Show. Joins me live on the phone from a moat some 30 feet under street level, I think, in Perone. How are you, Peter?
Ken, I'm doing well. Good to speak to you again, my good friend.
Good to speak to you, indeed, sir. What can you tell us about the project? How does something like this come about?
With great difficulty, Ken, and it's quite hard to put into words when you only take it as the project that I have, which is essentially, as you described there in your intro, 30 feet below street level in the moat of a castle, which has it dates back to about the 14th century, but it's seen Perone as a town. In the Somme region would have had about 80% of it destroyed. So to take that then and put it into a garden context, one of the biggest challenges we had here was that because we're in the moat, and in order to get trees to grow up above street level to let the people know that the garden is below below the street, it's a really odd one to explain. But in order to do that, we have to dig down. And so meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, I've done, I think, about 4 weeks in France so far. About 3 of those weeks were just to get this project to kick off, to explain to the, in Ireland, we might have a heritage parks department or something that you might go to and say, plant a tree or want to do something. Well, here you have the War Memorial Society, you have the heritage, you have a listed building. And the biggest problem was that nobody really knows what exists below ground because, how do I phrase it very eloquently, seen so much. And in a world gone mad, you get to create a garden of peace, which, I mean, Ireland has its own history. Perone, as somebody explained to me today, is a very different but similar history. And so where you and I might have grown up knowing a very different Ireland, my daughter doesn't have to go up seeing that. And to hear local people say that back to you, that this is going to bring a smile to somebody's face, when you think about it like that, is just, it's a game changer.
Hope you had a lovely weekend. You're welcome to a brand new week of Late Lunch. Let's begin the show today. My first guest has been selected to represent Ireland in creating one of 9 gardens that are to be assembled at the Somme in France to commemorate the end of World War One and bear witness to the vast numbers and diversity of those who gave their lives in the Great War. In French parlance, he's known as an artist, an architect and a horticulturalist. But back home in North County Dublin in Ballyboghel, he's a plain old landscaper. He ain't. Peter Donegan, you're very welcome to the show.
It's good to be back, Terry. How are you?
Thank you very much indeed for joining me. That's the way they do describe you. Like, your work is considered an art form there, yes.
They take it extremely serious over there. And I think all of the professions are split into, he is the person who builds the garden. They take the maintenance of gardens extremely serious, and the design, you're right, that's the way they would describe it. This is the artist or the architect, and it's slightly unusual to hear that. But then I think, as I said to Louise before coming on air, we've a tendency as Irish people to play things down ever so slightly and
we
not get above
do,
your
Peter,
station.
We do, and I'm delighted to say artist, architect and horticulturalist today. Tell us this, is a very prestigious commission you have been given. But is it fair to say you weren't exactly busting a gut when they came to you first?
I'm getting slightly big-headed here, and I've got my dad ringing in my left ear, and I'm not allowed to really get above my station, but it popped up on my radar twice, all right, and I just left it to one side. And it was, funnily enough, a conversation with Helen Basson, wife of James Basson. And Helen and James would have won gold in Chelsea in 2017 with the M&G Investment Garden. And Helen just said to me, you should go for this. And it's one of those stories that I kind of went, oh, fair enough, I'll put in a thing. And I read the description, and I think originally what I had seen was the overall picture of when you say it out loud, it kind of rings in my ears a bit. But, you know, to mark the end of World War One, number one, number two, it's in the moat of a 13th century castle, 30 foot below street level. They're looking for an Irish designer or somebody to represent Ireland, or as they worded it, Peter Donegan was selected by a French jury to represent Ireland, which sounds quite grand, if you'll allow me say it at that. And then you take into account the history of what that castle itself has seen. And even just from 1871 with the Franco-Prussian War, you know, since then, I spoke to one guy and he said to me his father was one when he left just before the First World War, 1914. He comes back to find the town is decimated. 80% of Perone was destroyed. Anybody who could hold a gun was, you know, they were only boys, let's be quite honest about it. Comes back to Perone to see it flattened, gets enlisted into the army, stays on and serves in World War II and comes back to find the place is flattened again. And that's just one man. You know, there's another story where I was out for lunch. One of the guys who works in the castle invited me to his home for lunch. And his wife has shown me a photograph of a guy. And she said, see this guy here? She said, he's a German soldier. She said, in World War One, they moved into the house. And she said, this is him in World War Two. She said, the procession of tanks is coming through the town. He pulls up outside the house, walks back in and says, hey, remember me? Now, if that's me and you in the pub, and I haven't been on your radio show in about 3 or 4 years, that's semi-understandable. But when you think of what was about to happen, and you start to pinch yourself when you realise that it's so close to home. I mean, the numbers on, I think it's French and German alone, or sorry, French and English soldiers dead. I think it's 2.25 million and about 7 million injured. And you really do have to pinch yourself and say, they're taking yours truly, and saying, here is the symbol of Perone, this grand old castle dating back to the 13th century with a limestone base that has been nothing but destroyed, gets back on its feet, destroyed again, and you're going to make a permanent installation here and we've chosen you. You do have to pinch yourself when you hear it, when you take into consideration that history. It's not just we're going to build a new park off the M50.
Of course. This is really significant.
Yeah.
And you are there as an Irishman because so many Irish fought in both of those wars as well and gave their lives, and it's been a moot point in this country from the state was formed. Tell me about the garden itself. You mentioned that, you know, you had to make a pitch for this. Did they give you the remit of the garden?
It wasn't such a pitch as such. What they said to me afterwards, and again, I spoke to Louise in depth about this, because it's like when, as I said to one of my friends in London, you know, I said, when Sharon Stone or whoever you fancy, when you were 14, 15 years of age, asked you up to dance, you really, that's probably a really bad analogy, but you get what I'm saying. Sometimes you do have to turn around and pinch yourself and say, well, how come she asked me? It's not that you doubt your ability to build a garden in this case, but you do have to pinch. And what they had based it on loosely was a CV or an ability to build gardens. And again, I'll take the don't get above your station Irish man. I'll put that back in maybe on the top left-hand corner. And what they had sent me originally was a couple of photographs of the base of the castle, which gave you no indication of. So I had suggested, they had made a big point, I should add, sorry, Jerry, that it wasn't a war memorial garden as we know them. And just for your listeners at home, Edwin Lutyens would have designed the war memorial garden at Teepval, which commemorates the 740,000 approximate missing. And if you Google even a photograph of that, that structure is mammoth. He also designed war memorial gardens in Island Bridge, where I did a summer stint going through Horticultural College. And coincidentally, random pop quiz round, he designed the private gardens on Ireland's Eye. Or sorry, Lambay Island, my apologies.
Okay.
So that puts Edwin Lutyens in context. What they'd said about this one was that it wasn't a memorial garden. It was a Jardin de la Paix. It was a garden of peace. It's a lovely, in a world gone mad, taking modern news into consideration. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it, to be quite honest with you. But they wanted this to be something that would make people smile. And that's a very difficult sentence to say.
So that's all you were given, really?
That's essentially all it was given. A little
garden of peace, make people smile, not on the traditional war memorial sense.
In a nutshell, what they had said was Jardin de la Paix, Garden of Peace, here's a photograph and here's some text and a bit of history to the town. What I had taken, and funnily enough, I've been 9 years doing the half marathon with Temple Street on Inishmore, albeit badly, I should say, with a couple of pints beforehand just to warm up the bones. But I eventually made it out to, after 9 years, I made it out to Dún na Cathair, which is the unknown part of Inishmore, which is essentially... pardon my, if anybody from Inishmore is listening, I apologise sincerely, but it's utter limestone and very reticent of what we would know as Father Ted. Mm. And there's one part of it right overlooking the edge of the coast where they had these arched areas where you could almost sit in if the wind was beating in, and it would filter the wind as a hedgerow would do it in the North County or out this direction. But out that way, it was done in limestone, and I just said in my head, you know, it's coincidental, isn't it, that the 1 year I make it, whilst I'm in the middle of this submission, that the castle base is 13th century and Dún na Cathair is somewhere between 11th and 15th. And it's slightly vague when that is, or at least it was by my research. So I loosely based part of it on. And the funny thing about the shape of those walls, if you sit on a picnic bench in any park in Ireland or street bench, both of us face the same direction, which is the far side of the road. At a dinner table, you sit facing each other. It's slightly unusual, a concept when you close your eyes and you think about it. But on these walls, when I sat down with Sean, who was with me, good friend of mine, we could not sit anywhere on those walls but look at each other and have a conversation.
And that's what you've brought in.
And that's essentially one part of what I brought in. Because the bridge is there, and the bridge is metaphorical, so the garden itself and the dried up moat is 30 foot below street level, so you can't see the garden, number one. So the right hand side was the part. We sat and watched the people, and they would walk down the steps to the left hand side and walk the whole way around. It was just a pathway straight way through and out the far side. So the question was, how do you bring them into the right hand side of the room, number one? And number two, how do you then get them to stay longer? And number three, and I didn't use the word laughter, I used the word smile. How do you get that when you, so we're in a soundproof room here essentially, and the walls are padded, but when you take stone and you bounce sound off it and you make it come up 30 foot above onto the street level, then the inquisitive mind gets to say, What's down there? So I said, how do you get the sound of smiles to bounce off the stones out onto the streets?
It's brilliant.
And that was the whole concept of the garden. And once I explained, I think that they then went into the CV. So the question is, does your mind wander a little bit? Can you take a dream, make it into an equation, and then make it appear like a dream all over again, which is a very hard thing to do, number one. And number two, then, it was based on your ability to build gardens, which apparently I obviously ticked those boxes.
You do. Listen, don't be ever taking away from the brilliant work you do yourself. So have you the structures built? Where are you with this? It has to be finished by when? October?
We're told October, but we... So I've done, to put in context, we did 3 weeks of meetings over there, and it'll put into how serious it is from, bearing in mind they were... We're the only garden that I'm aware of the series with permission to dig down. There was a mild, shall I say, fear of what may be unearthed due to the moat's history. And once all those permissions were ticked, because we needed trees to come up over the height of the wall, so therefore we had to, horticulturally, we had to go down, number one. But they were slightly afraid of what we might find. So we've done all of those meetings. I literally flew back in on Saturday morning, just gone. I've lived in Perone for the last 4 weeks. Now, every day. I think my first weekend there was Bastille Day, and the next week they won the World Cup, so I didn't get an ounce of sleep. The whole place, it's a small farm and town that don't serve Guinness. It's slightly unusual and new to me. It's fine to go on holidays, but it's another thing to live and work there. We've done what I would call phase one, but we were 36 Celsius. On the day I came home, we were 36 Celsius. And then you take the fact that we're 30 foot below with stone walls either side. So the place is like an oven, literally like an oven below ground. The plants will soar so long as they'll get enough water. But then it hadn't rained, similar to weather that we had here.
Yes.
It hadn't rained at all. So we needed to make it a phase two. And then from a horticultural perspective, we needed to make it a phase two anyway, because we had to bring the large trees in. So moving back over again in a couple of weeks.
To do that.
To do phase two, all of the finishing touches, and then it will be inauguration time.
So Peter, there is the deadline, October, and all this is aiming towards the 100 years since the ending of World War One in 1918. You'll have it done. It will be ready.
There's no choice about it. At the moment, I think it's very unusual what's happened, because at home people should remember, hopefully, the big bout of snow that we had at the start of this year. We were personally snowed in and couldn't get anywhere near down towards Ballybohol village. They've had similar climate in France, and now they've gone to the other extreme. But we all know what November and September is like in Ireland. When the kids go back to school, the leaves start to fall off the trees, and all of a sudden the weather starts to come down. But as anybody will tell you, like show garden building or like anything with a deadline, if we don't, there's no option to not doing it. It's going to happen. Rain, hail, sleet or snow, it's going to happen. We're just unsure what weather conditions will be. And we just have, it's one of those things.
You just get
on with it.
This, again, I want to say, this is just not like the shows. You mentioned show gardens, that it's assembled and taken apart afterwards. This is for good. This will be a permanent garden.
It's a permanent installation. So to put it into context, what we've done on the right-hand side, Gerry, and this was the hardest part, and I literally sat in Perone, I'd say in total, for, if you add it all up, for about a day and a half at varying times, and just watched the people coming and going and watched how things operated in the town. And it's quite a small town, to be quite fair about it. But directly opposite the castle, which holds I think it's Europe's largest war memorial museum.
It does indeed.
Directly opposite there, you've got a series of restaurants on the left-hand side and a couple of cafe-esque type bars, a little bit sexier than we might know them, but at the same token, they do it extremely well. And I'm one of eight children, and I was saying to them, you know, when we used to go on the holidays to be at Arklow or be it to France, when Arklow was, going there was huge. But at the same token, watching the people on the far side, what you realise is if you've got a series of kids or a school group or a tour group, you don't have 30 or 40 quid per head to go and have a lunch. So on the right hand side, the beams, just to put in context, are 30 centimetres by 30 centimetres, which is pretty big. If I'm honest with you, pull out a measuring tape if you're sitting at home, listen to this, it is mammoth. Each one of those beams is 4 metres long. And within that, it's like there's about four dining room tables, if you can imagine it, with the centre hollowed out. And the idea then is we'll grow the fruiting trees up through the centre of, so they'll form, instead of having a canopy, as you might have outside a bar in a restaurant, their primary objective is to form an umbrella over your head so you can sit in the shade, because we've worked in the heat and we know what it's like. So if we can do that, number one, then the kids, and if you've got a two-year-old kid trying to keep it in the shade, something that has to be taken into consideration, whilst you're having a cup of coffee in the moat of a castle where nobody ever went. And then when you look over the wall and you can see the sound, but you don't know where it's coming from, so you get down to the left. But when you get down to the left, a bit like 17th century landscape design, you take somewhere like Ardgill and Castle or Newbridge House or one of these big domains. When you stand at the back of the house, you usually see a scantily clad lady made of stone. You walk towards her, and the objective is never to walk towards her. The objective is to get distracted and go off on a detour path. So in this case, the idea is that you'll hear the sound that will draw you towards it. But when you go intentionally to go into the right-hand side, you get sidetracked and you go off onto the left. So you get,
And the point you're making with the tables and that, will people be able to dine there or bring their own food in or have a picnic or things like that in it?
Yeah, well, that's, again, the museum has a cafe-type restaurant, yes, around the back of it. But, you know, if you know the town and you wander through it, and again, I was speaking to the locals and I was saying to them, you know, and they said, we don't go down to it. And I said, well, why don't you go down to it? And they said, we've no reason to. And I said, well, what if I did? What if somebody did this? What if we put in an area where you could go with your family? Mm. And then I spoke to the castle and I listened to the staff there. And then we spoke to the historical lads who work for the government officials, and we listened to them speak, and we listened to them saying, well, you know, essentially there was no reason to go in and sit. And whether it's your garden that's 10 metres by 4 metres or 6 metres by 8 metres, I mean, I gave a talk down at Limerick Milk Market a couple of weeks before I went away. And what I said to them was, when you close your eyes and your husband-to-be promises you the dream The Dream from His Heart, the Romeo and Juliet, the Dire Straits song, and says to you, close your eyes, honey. This is going to be us for the rest of our lives. Can you picture it? Can you picture it? Yeah, it's a chocolate shed down the bottom right-hand corner that costs 640 quid in a super-duper garden centre hardware store. And we're going to have industrial fence panels left and right-hand side. Come on. Come on. Give me the hooks. Give me the hooks. There's nothing sexy about that. That's a functional garden, and functional and practical never appear sexy. Like high heel shoes, and apologies to your listeners, I've got four sisters, but high heel shoes at a wedding always come with a spare pair of shoes, comfortable shoes, inverted commas, in the handbag. Because one looks sexy and one is entirely practical, but practical doesn't turn you on, if you'll allow me say it that way. And it has to have, in all things where you close your eyes and fall in love and you paint the dream and you paint the picture, you don't know why you stayed longer, but you did.
I'm just looking at the title I gave you, artist, architect and horticulturalist in high heels. I think I'll add that on now.
Well, let me give you a funny one, Jerry. They asked me for a name for the garden, which I was hesitant to do, and eventually I conceded, if you'll allow me use that word, and I said to them, let's call it Jardin in Eutysia, and Eutysia is the Greek goddess of happiness.
There you go. Well, look, I want to say to you again, well done to you, and you're one of only nine selected to do this and watch this space. And if you're heading to the Somme, Peter's imprint will be there forever. Just before you leave us, I want to ask you something. You're going to the World Annual Landscape Show in London in Battersea on the 18th, 19th of September. Is that tied in with this?
They've asked me to go across. So myself and a good friend at this stage of the game, Andrew Fisher Tomlin. Andrew is a former selector of judges for Chelsea Flower Show. Andrew has been commissioned, him and Dan Bowyer were commissioned to represent Wales and design at none other than Teapval Memorial. Now, they have an entirely different garden. So the whole thing has raised its head all for the better. And again, in a world gone mad, you know, just to put this back in, they are gardens of peace and this is a garden of happiness, or hopefully that's what it brings with it. So to be invited to speak in London at Landscape Show alongside Andrew, it puts maybe in context what Across the Water is seeing in what I and others have been chosen or are selected to do in France. Yeah.
So. Brilliant. It's fantastic. And I'm sure you're looking forward to that as well. The day job goes on. And if you want to find out more about this fella, dunneganlandscaping.com is where you can get all the information there. You've a lot going on at home besides these special projects and this big one in France. Yes.
Look, Jerry, I'll be very honest with you. I was a goofy kid with a Beatles haircut. I'll put that in context. Mom cut my fringe with a scissors and there was no other option because I was one of eight children, and I used to bring my plants to school in my school bag and sit down the back of the class on my own and watch them, just watch them in my school bag in case anything happened to them, because I used to keep them under my bed. And all of a sudden now I'm I know I don't look at you, say Jerry, but I'm 42 years of age, and that little bit of childlike something has just never left me. That inquisitive pain in the backside who kept on asking his dad too many questions repeatedly over and over, why dad, why dad, why dad, why dad, and essentially now I get to do what I always wanted to do. And if I'm outside with a set of headphones in, listen to a PPI award winning radio station such as your own, says he, charming the pants off of Jerry. But if I'm out the back garden doing that and I'm just pruning a few fruit trees of my own, or I'm building a garden for somebody else, I am literally at my happiest. And in this case, it's just a garden in France.
Good luck to you and congratulations again, Peter Dunnigan. Well deserved, and may success continue to follow you and you it for many, many years to come. Thanks for dropping into us.
Pleasure as always, Jerry, and thanks to yourself and Louise.
We're also the first of the projects to kick off, and as they worded it, Peter Dunnigan, without flying my own flag too much, but was selected by the French jury to represent Ireland. So I pinch myself when I hear that. But I think more to the point, I think when you take into consideration this town, what it's seen, talking to grandchildren who are speaking about their grandfathers and how they had to leave their town to get away from a war, to come back to be drafted into the war, and you're asked to create a garden to make people smile in a town where they're going to mark the end of the first of the world wars, is quite the privilege and the honour. And it's not something, whether or not Macron comes, it's not something I really want to get wrong. Mm-hmm. So if it takes an extra couple of days or an extra week, then so be it. I don't think there are too many 14th century castles going around that guys like me are going to get the landscape
an awful lot. No, in fairness, I have no doubt about it. Well, Peter Donegan, Donegan Landscaping, and you can read more as well on your blog and find those newspaper articles from the local French media online at donneganlandscaping.com. Thanks a million for taking the time out of your day and out of the moat and out of everything that's around you to have a chat.
Pleasure, Ken. Always good to hear a friendly voice.
You like the gist of that, and you're at the landscape show, Battersea Park, the 18th and 19th of September. Myself and Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, designing that teepfile, will be speaking about that together. And obviously, I'll be taking it on an entirely different angle. I look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for listening, and for everything else, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, and Sideshow.com. Very much appreciated. Take care. Bye-bye.